Let's resume with what we're here to study today, which is the last parak of Midos. Okay, so this is on page 74, Lamed Zayin on the base. And now we're going to talk about the Azara and the rest of the Leshachot that were there. Okay, so we finished yesterday with the Heichal. We talked about the measurements of the Heichal. Now we move on to the measurements of the Azara. Okay, so this is within the inner wall. Kol HaAzara. Everybody with me? Mishnah Aleph, Perek Chamishi, Mishnah Aleph, Perek 5, Mishnah 1. On the last, final page. You got to keep on turning, way down till the end. Lamed Zayin, Amud Beis.
Well, Lamed Zayin?
Yeah. Okay?
Okay.
Kol HaAzara.
Oh, that's why I had the thing in the wrong place.
One more. Kol HaAzara Hayeta Orech Mea Ushmonim Vasheva, 187 in length. Arochav me'a u'shloshim v'chamesh and 135 in width. Min ha'mizrach l'ma'arav me'a u'shmonim v'sheva. So length, again, was east to west, so let's see how that looked. Mekom drisat Yisrael, the place of literally the stepping of Yisrael, meaning what is known to us as the Ezrat Yisrael, the area. Like we have an Ezrat Nashim, there was an Ezrat Nashim there as well, but we have an Ezrat Yisrael where all the Yisraelim were allowed, meaning the non where they generally gathered, which was 11 amot. That's where they were allowed to walk. There was no issues with going there. Mekom drisat ha-kohanim, the place where the kohanim would go, which was called Ezrat Kohanim, in, again, the way that we speak. Echad esrei ama, so these were both 11 amot. Okay, so again, we're calculating up to 187, and we've got 11 and 11. Hamizbeach shloshim v'shtaim, the mizbeach took up 32 additional Amot ben ha'ulam v'lam izbeach, and then there was a gap between the ulam, okay, between the antechamber, meaning between the front part of the heichal, and the mizbeach was estrim ushtayim ama. That was another 22. So we've got 32, 22, and then 22 of the two 11s combined. So basically 76. Ha'heichal me'a ama, another 100, as we said, from the heichal. That's one. I'm off by one. 176.
It has a chayil in brackets as well. I think that's a misprint.
That is a misprint. It's clearly the heichal.
Yeah, I agree.
V'achat beit hakaporet, and from beyond the kodesh hakadoshim, meaning the back wall of the heichal, and till the end of, again, this of the courtyard over here, of the azara, is another 11. Okay, so basically if you add it all up, it's 176 plus this last 11 is 187. That's how you get the length of the Azara. So again, you've got the two places where Yisraelim and Kohanim could stand, which were each 11, that's 22. The Mizbeach, another 32, that's 54. Another 22 till you get to the door of the Ulam, that's 76. 100 of the Heichal, 176, and another 11 would be 187. That is how you get this full length. On the other side, meaning going from north to south, so to get the width of the Azara, min hatzafon ladarom, mea ushloshim v'chamesh, it's 135. Let's see how we get that. Hakevesh v'hamizbeach shishim ushtaim. In this direction, right, the mizbeach was at a right angle to the heichal proper, so it was much longer, extending across the width of the Azara, as opposed to going down the length of the Azara. So in this case, because you included the ramp. Mm-hmm. Okay, so the ramp plus the Mizbeach were 62. Min HaMizbeach LaTaba'ot, which we talked about the first day that I came. Mm-hmm. From the Mizbeach to the rings that they had was an additional Shmoneh Amot, that's how much space you had. Mekom HaTaba'ot Estrim V'Arba, the place where the rings were 24. So we're adding up here 62 plus another 8 is 70. Plus another 24 is 94. Min ha-taba'ot la-shulchanot arba. From the rings that they had, again, for the animals, to the shulchanot, which was these tables that they had made of marble, which I think we referenced briefly, was another 4. Min ha-shulchanot v'la-nanasin arba. From the tables to the nanasin. Nanasin, by the way, in modern Hebrew, anybody know what it means?
They're columns.
Nope. In modern day Hebrew, refer to someone who's very, very short.
It was made to put the skins on.
Correct. That's what they were used. But they're dwarfs. Yes. Yes. We refer...
What?
Someone who is very, very short is called a nanas.
Dwarf.
The Mishnah tells us that we make a bracha of Mishane Habriot over someone who is a nanas. Just interesting to note. It just means they were very, very short pillars. That's why dwarf pillars is a fantastic translation. Min hananasin lekotel, so that's another four. Min hananasin lekotel ha'azara shmone amot, from these short pillars to the actual wall was another eight. V'hamotar bin hakevesh lekotel u'mekom hananasin. This is the first Mishnah where we don't actually hit the required number. Right? So we've got, we know it's 135, so let's count. 62 plus another 8 is 70, plus another 24 is 94, plus another 4 is 98, plus another 4 is 102, plus another 8 is 110, and then it says, and the leftovers was between here and here, this area. So the area that the pillars took up, the areas between the ramp, we don't know exactly what was there. We know which parts had a minimum of which length, but there was more space there. Might there have been more space between here and here? Might the pillars have taken up a very significant amount of space? The answer is absolutely. They did. We know that it's 135, and we know these are the minimums for each of the different sections. Good? All any right. questions? You can look. There's, again, I'm sure you have many beautiful pictures. Yeah. Everybody.
Well, the problem with the pictures. Different ideas about how large the pillars area was.
That's what I'm saying. Correct. The problem with the pictures is there are different views of different rabbis.
Right.
Right. Pick the one you like.
Yeah, but again, the point is in the Mishnah, we have certain givens, and everybody works with those givens to create their idea of how long exactly everything was. But again, we have a basic idea. Mm-hmm.
So, just one question. When we were talking about going east to west, and it talked about between the antechamber and the altar, 22 amot. What is that area used for?
So I would defer to those who are here for the entire Masechet Midot. I don't know offhand.
Okay.
Presumably it was used as an entrance way, but I don't know what it was.
You know, they talk about there's the place of the altar, okay, and then there's this between the antechamber and the altar, and then there's
space,
the sanctuary. So there's some space there. What is it used for? Like,
it's just space. It's space.
Just to enter.
Yeah, it's space. That's all.
That's my best bet.
They doesn't necessarily have to use it. You see, the other picture here doesn't show that space that big. So each picture is different.
It doesn't matter. That's in the Mishnah. We can't deny that space was there. It's a significant 22 amos is a significant amount of space. But perhaps it wanted to give clearance to the door.
To go to Kodesh, maybe. I don't know.
No, that's on the other side. To go into the antechamber, to the ulam.
To the ulam.
So we're talking about between the mizbeach and the ulam.
Okay.
Fine. But if I find out, I will let you know.
Thank you.
Shesh leshachot hayu ba'azara. Now we get to the six other rooms. Lishkot, I would imagine, were slightly larger than ta'im, right? Again, the ta'im were the little cubbies that we talked about. These are lishachot. We hear about them in other places in the Mishnah, which you may or may not remember. And here were the six that were in the actual azara. Shalosh batzafon v'shalosh badarom. There were three in the north and three in the south along the two sides. She batzafon. Those that were in the north were named the following. Lishkat ha-melach. The salt room, basically, Lishkat HaParva, the fur room, and Lishkat HaMedichim, the washer's room. What exactly did all of these do? Okay, let's read. Says the Mishnah, Lishkat HaMelach, in the salt room, Sham Hayu Notnim Melach LaKorban. We know that Al Kol Korban Chatakriv Melach, there had to be salt on the various korbanot. So therefore, this was the salt room, exactly what it sounded. They would prepare salt for all the korbanot. Lishkat HaParva, which we said is like a fur or a skin. Sham hayu molchin orot kadashim. That's where they would salt
the new skins. Holy skins, yeah.
Yeah, the skins from the korbanot. Okay. Nobody's quite sure why it's called Parva. Was it the name of the guy who built
it? That's the word that's used
today. Or I know that's what we use today. That I'm aware of. But the question is, where does it originally come from?
Here's where it comes from.
But
it's in between room.
Yeah.
Since it wasn't Fleishik.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Al-Gaga, and by the way, says the Mishnah, to cross-reference to something else that we're aware of, Al-Gaga haya beit ha-tfila le-kohen gadol v'yom ha-kippurim. On the roof of the Lishkat ha-parva was a mikvah for the Kohen Gadol. And that's where he would go. And this is can be found in Masechet Yoma as well. Okay, and this is all of the tfilot. We're in the beit ha-tfila, al-gag beit ha-parva, on the roof of the parva, except for... he says there's one of the tefillot was of the Kohen Gadol was not, was in the mikvah on top of the Shar HaMayim. But anyways, the bottom line is this was one important place. Lishkat HaMedichin, and finally the one of the washers, Sheshem Ayu Medichin Kirvei HaKadoshim, that's where they would wash out the innards. You know, you had lots of dirty insides of animals that needed to be washed out. He says again, some things were washed over here, some things were washed elsewhere. As the Mishnah tells us in Tamid, which again I was not lucky enough to learn with you, but this is again where they would wash out the innards of the animals. Umisham misiba ola ligag beta parva, and again you had a misiba which was either again a ramp or a set of stairs, but some elevated platform to get up to the roof of the beta parva, which as we said the Kohen Gadol would tovel in on Yom Kippur. Okay, so we've got our three
misiba. It goes around there. Round steps, the circular steps,
Yeah, makes sense. We know it went around the outer edge.
Circular.
Yeah. Yes.
Do you have any reason why they're called kodshim as opposed to karbonot?
Yeah, I think in the Mishnah, oftentimes it uses kodshim as opposed to korbanot. I think you'd be, from my very limited...
kodshim is somebody that's sanctified. Korban is something that goes on the Mizbeach. So it's the step before it goes on the Mizbeach. That's when they're kodshim.
Yeah, but these are all post-Mizbeach here, right? When the animal is dead and you're salting its skin, hopefully it hasn't just been sanctified.
No, I said that's when it's kodshim. It becomes a korban when they take it up the ramp and put it there. This is before they're sacrificed.
No, it's not. How can they wash out the innards before it's sacrificed?
Or how can they wash it after it's sacrificed?
The innards of the animal?
Yeah, the innards of the animal are put on the mizbeah.
After it's killed.
Yeah.
Oh, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
But it's still already been slaughtered.
Yeah, it's slaughtered, sure, but
you're saying it hasn't kodshim, been. It's only kodshim when it's when burnt.
It's kodshim until
it's kodshim until
it's
burnt.
The dominant nature kodshim means it's a holy thing that becomes the korban. The
okay,
korban is kodshim also.
Korban is only once it's been burnt.
Exactly, once it gets on the mizbeah. That's the distinction.
Interesting. Okay, I'd have to look at that in the Mishnah. I think the Mishnah usually will use kodshim in all that I've seen here. But
check it out. I think that's how I always understood it. That.
Interesting.
Because you'll call even utensils kodshim. They call the utensils sometimes kodshim.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I suppose.
Okay. All right. Number game by
Shabbat Darom. Yeah. And so these were the... So we said there were six of these leshachot, of these rooms. Three in the north, we already said. Now here are the three in the south. Mm-hmm. Lishkat ha'etz, Lishkat ha'gola, Lishkat ha'gazit. So what are these three? The first one is the room of wood. The second one is the room of the gola. Exactly how you should translate that. We'll see. But we would translate gola as diaspora. Mm-hmm. But there can be other translations as well. Lishkat ha'gazit was the famous one where the Sanhedrin were, but let's see. Lishkat ha'etz. Why was it? What did it do? This is one of the most...
The art scroll corrects, it says Sheba Darom, but it was supposed to mean Betzafon.
Betzafon, yeah.
Yeah, he says there are some. He says there are some that say one, some that say the other.
Right.
But they would have had to have corrected the previous Mishnah to be the opposite.
Right, correct.
Just to note.
Did they translate with Gola? Gola?
No, it just says diaspora.
Yeah,
right,
that's
now.
It.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, we'll see again as we continue.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so here they are. Lishkat ha'etz, and this was a very, very powerful line to me. Amar Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov. Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov says, Shachachti me haita mishameshet. I forgot what it was used for. I forgot. It's like those Rashis in Chumash, right? Rashi says, "I don't know what this means."
I just had one this week.
Yeah, and I think this is such a Musar Shmuz to all of us that Rabbi Elezer ben Yaakov published in the Mishnah says, "I forgot." First of all, you see how important this was and how much they were Model Haemet.
Wouldn't you think that there would be a place where they stored the wood that was set aside for the Korbanot?
You would assume so.
Right.
But
actually, if you remember from the Dead Sea Scrolls, they actually had a holiday in El for the storing and the gathering of the wood for the Beit HaMikdash. Remember that? It was on the 15th of El. Remember that?
I've read that at one point. I'm not.
But that was them, not us.
The problem is you had, apparently, on the outside, Lishkat Ha'itzim.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Meaning
the corner.
Correct, but this was on the outside. This is in the Ezrat Nashim, on the other part of Har HaBayit. Yeah. So it couldn't be that Lishkat Ha'it, the small one that was inside, was also used for that purpose, presumably. And that's why, if you look, right here are the three Lishachot here, and here are the three Lishachot over here. Yeah. Again, Lishkat Ha'itzim, we already know is for that purpose. Yeah. Lishkat Ha'itz has got to be for something else.
Okay.
All right. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, I forgot what he used to do with it, which is... Again, a quite amazing statement. Abba Shaul Omer, Abba Shaul says, it was the Lishkat Kohen Gadol, the place where the Kohen Gadol hung out, and it was called Lishkat Haitz. Okay, this he brings here that the Gemara would call this Lishkat Parhedrin, which we say in Yoma. He says, if you look in the different commentaries, they try to explain why this might be called Lishkat Ha'etz. But anyways, V'hi'ayita achorei shtehen. This was actually placed behind the other two Lishachot. V'gag shloshtan shaveh. And the roof was all one big roof, meaning it was like two in front and one in back. This Lishka was behind the other two. Okay, that's what the Mishnah is telling us here. And they had a common roof, again, a T-shaped roof. But this was the case. Okay. Lishkat HaGola. What is Lishkat HaGola? As we said, of the diaspora. Sham haya bor kavua. There was a pit for water purposes. Some sort of well. V'hagalgal natun alav. And basically there was a drying mechanism on top of it. U'misham maspikim mayim l'chol ha'azara. And therefore, and from there, they would get enough water for the entire Azara. All of the needs of the water would come from this place, Lishkat HaGola.
The Golgol was a rolling cover for the pit. It would roll on it and roll off of it. And that's how they covered it.
That's one opinion. Right. Another opinion he brings here is that it was a pulley system. Right, it was a round pulley system, so you could use the Golgol to pull up the water.
Right.
They would need a lot of water.
They would, and that's why I think this is like so impressive. Mm-hmm. I would imagine, perhaps this system, whatever is being described here, allowed them to draw lots of water very quickly, or they did it at lots of times, but they would need tons of water for all the washings and other things.
It still doesn't explain why it's called Gola.
Yeah, so some people say, so there's two opinions that he brings here, three opinions maybe, okay?
Well, etymologically, it's good. It's Gimel Lamed Lamed. It's very good.
So that's
It fits. It fits that.
Yeah. So
it's the same root.
Galgal and Gola are Gimel Lamed together. Some say that. Other people say it was actually dug by people who came from the diaspora.
Yeah.
This pit. There's other opinions as well. He brings other ones.
Yeah.
There was a Gula instead of a that literally is called Lishkat HaGula.
Yeah.
Yeah. But again, there's different opinions.
Yeah.
As always, Lishkat HaGazit. Okay. So this was called Lishkat HaGazit with cut stones. Okay. You're not supposed to have those in the Mizbeach.
In the construction.
Okay. In the construction of the Mizbeach, but you did have it in this Lishka, and they were square stones. Sham Haita Sanhedre Gedola Shel Yisrael Yoshevet. This was where the Sanhedrin would sit. You can imagine this was a large room. Lishkat HaGazit is referred to as the place where the Sanhedrin have all over the place. And they would sit, as we know, in their semicircle And they would judge in this place all of the things that had to do with Kohanim, right? Because there were a lot of questions that could come up with a Kohen in regards to their ability to do the Avoda, to perform the service or not. In particular, what are some examples? Sulim Le'edut.
Yeah.
Right? So, for example, yeah, if a Kohen does certain acts that are inappropriate, they would become Pasul,
yeah,
to do the Avoda. They wouldn't be allowed to. Right? Or
would
things that would happen during the service, exactly, or Tuma, or Mumin. These would be judged by the Sanhedrin. And the Mishnah, the rest of the Mishnah, basically talks about this whole process, because it's not something really that we've touched upon in so many other places. So here's what the process would be.
Yeah.
They would judge the Kohanim as follows. Here's what would happen. If a Kohen shenimtza bo psul, if a Kohen was found to be pasul, was that the Sanhedrin ruled that this person was no longer allowed to continue to do the avoda, lovesh chorim, he would have to wear dark clothes, umitatesh chorim, and he would wrap himself in a dark wrap, viyotze viholechlo, and he would just walk out, basically, and that would be the end. He wouldn't be allowed to do the avod anymore. It's a very, very sad thing. However, v'shalonim sabopsul, if a guy was on trial and he didn't, lovesh levanim, he would wear white clothing, umitatef levanim, and he would wrap himself in white, nichnas umishamesh imechav hakohanim, and he would go in and he would serve alongside his brothers.
So they're implying that there was no temporary ban at the Kohanim. Once they, pardon the expression, screwed up, they were finished. It looks like what they're saying here.
Yes, for certain types of psulim.
Yeah.
Right, for certain types of psulim.
Yeah.
Certain mumin that may pass. But
temporary,
but yes,
permanent, yeah.
Yes, there are differences there, but this is talking about someone who's been permanently banned. Yes. Yeah.
So this is, I may be asking the obvious, but this is when he goes in to ensure anonymity, so that they don't know who's going in while he's wrapping himself in black, or is this just because
he's
under suspicion?
That's a really great question.
Humiliated.
That's a really great question. It could be either. We see ideas of both in other places. We see, again, wearing black sometimes is to hide one's identity, certainly. The implication...
Sort of the idea that he's wrapping.
The impression that I get is that it's not. It's actually kind of like a you're being blacklisted type of thing.
After the trial.
Because simply the person in white is also wrapped. So that's my personal feeling, is my best guess, I should say, is that...
Like in the movies, it's the good guys and the bad guys.
And the good guys wear nice clothes, the bad guys always wear big black suits, right?
Yeah.
And considering also...
You know what?
The sota.
Yeah. No, but it's also now from that, somebody, when they die, they wear black. As a result, these people have been banned for life, so they wear black clothing for the sake. Same reason, right? Yeah. They're like dead. I'm putting quote.
Yeah,
around
dead
it.
To us.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's and considering also, again, the to whatever degree we know the shenanigans of the Second Temple, this takes also a little bit more meaning in terms of, again, who we had exactly involved in the kahuna and the fighting and other things. Yeah. So perhaps
It also doesn't say what happens if they did find something.
Kohen Shanim Tzabo Psul.
Yeah,
if they did find the first phrase is if it's found that they did something wrong,
then they wear
the black. And if shalonim sabupsul, if there was nothing found wrong, meaning the Sanhedrin decided this act did not cross a certain threshold, then again lovesh levanim mitatef levanim nichnas umeshamesh imechav hakohanim, he would enter in happiness. V'yom tov hayu osim, big party. Shalonim tzapsul bizaro shel Aharon HaKohen. And everyone would rejoice that, look, we, in the sons of Aaron, we have not found this person to be guilty, again, of this terrible act that he may have committed. V'kach hayu omrim. And here's what they would say. Maybe they would sing it. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu. No. Baruch HaMakom Baruch Hu. Blessed is Hashem. Blessed is he. Shalonim tzapsul bizaro shel Aharon. That there has been no psul found in the children of Aaron, uvaruchu, and blessed is he, shebachar be'aharon uvanav, blessed is Hashem that he chose Aaron and his sons, la'amod l'sharet lifnei Hashem, to serve, stand and serve before God, beveit kodshei ha'kodashim, in the Beit HaMikdash, And with this, for you guys, Selik Masechet Midot, and congratulations on finishing this last Mishnah.
See you sometime, or not?
Maybe we should do the Hadrons now.
Yeah.
Let's do it now. We have the minyan.
Do you want to do it after?
Did you do one after Tamid?
We have it here.
Midot is a bit questionable. I think people normally do the Hadron after they finish the whole section because Midot has no Gemara. So to make a full-fledged Siyum on one Masechet of Mishnayot.
It was also Rabbi Bergman's last day.
No, as you absolutely should.
See, under it says after.
Yes, but that's because it's assuming that you finished Kachim, or perhaps maybe the other ones.
Maybe what we should do is when we finish.
Interesting.
There's different. If we do Kinim
and Me'ila, then we.
But here, there's
Me'ila. We would do one. Correct. Me'ila. We would do one. When I did, I don't think we made a Siyum on Midot when we finished Kinim when we finished, just because there's no Gemara on them. When you finish a full Masechet of Gemara, it's much more reasonable to say, "Wow, this is a big accomplishment."
Does
Mila
have?
Mila does. Yeah, Mila is all Gemara.
I have one question. When they would sing that song, there was no disqualification.
Uh huh.
In the descendants of Aaron.
Uh huh.
So they do it after whatever you want.
Does that mean ever or that particular?
Oh, it just means that particular event. Obviously, there were Kohanim who did things that got themselves disqualified. There's no question. In our history, there were. It's just this was a praise that they would sing. Thank God that the sons of Aaron are clean today.
Today, like, okay.
Yeah, it doesn't say the word today, but clearly that's the meaning. It's talking about not even today, but this particular event. I would imagine that if there were two court cases, you had one where the guy was sent out, the next one they would still sing the song if he was found to be innocent. I would imagine.
Okay, so I think we leave it until we finish with Elam.
Yeah.
Because we already did one for Tamid.
Okay, after Kinim they don't have?
Because it was Rabbi Bergman's last day. So.
Interesting, yeah. They have one for Midot, but not for Kinim.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Well, Midot is and after probably Tamid to cover the other three.
After Tamid they don't have.
So that's what I suggested.
Yeah.
But
they don't have one after Kinim, and they don't have one after Tamid.
So we'll finish those two then.
The next one will be on Me'ila, God willing.
Okay, when we finish that, okay.
Anyway, just very, very briefly,
yeah.
We said we're going to give a few minutes of introduction to Masechet Kinim, which, as I referenced, is a very challenging Masechet from a mathematical perspective. A couple of mathematicians actually written Svarim on Kinim.
Engineers here.
Hopefully we can all
one engineer.
Keep.
Where's Kinim?
So Kinim should follow.
It's after Me'ila, I think.
Okay, in the Mishnayot, it's very interesting. I saw someone actually comment, in the Gemara, it's out of order. Kinim, technically speaking, from a Mishnayot perspective, is the very last Masechet in Kachim over here. Very interesting also, I don't know if you've ever noticed this, there's a theory, a very good and well-founded theory, that Masechtot are generally organized, generally speaking, there are some exceptions, are generally organized in terms of size within each Seder. So the small Masechet, like Kinim, which is only three chapters, does in fact go last in the Mishnayot, along with other Masechtot in other areas. Anyway, so Masechet Kinim, what are Kinim? We know from Egypt, Kinim with a kaf, not Kinim with a kuf, which we're about to learn about, but Kinim with a kaf are lice. Kinim with a kuf, which we're about to learn about, comes from the root kan, which is the kan sipor, right? We know ki kare kan sipor lefanecha baderech is shiluah or shilu mitzvah of shiluach hakan, shiluach hakan, means a bird's nest. The reason why is because this deals specifically with the issues that arise with bird sacrifices. We're going to talk about the torim and b'nei yonah, what they are, but the concerns that particularly arise is with little flying creatures that easily get mixed up because they're all of the same types. There was much more differentiation in type between the various korbanot when they were full-sized korbanot animals as opposed to just little birds. These would also often come in pairs. He lists over here yoledet, so a woman who has given birth, a mitzora, azav, azava, a nazir. If someone violates certain things, they would have to bring these birds, and also voluntarily, and also if they didn't have enough money for certain things. Correct. So virtually, you had so many different reasons and you could have chatas birds, and you could have ola birds, and this would create tremendous confusion, especially if these things got mixed up. And because of the specific surrounding, whether or not you can swap one for another, that basically creates all of these complicated scenarios, which the Masechet deals with, is what if this one got mixed up with this one? What if three of these got mixed up with seven of these? And so a lot of times it's going to be, okay, there's a minimum number that we can do this for, or we have to let them get moving, or, you know, various different details that we will have to deal with. We'll see in the Masechet itself, God willing, in the next few days.
Okay. This looks to me like it's going to be interesting.
So are we decided then, are we going to, after we do Kinim, we'll go to Me'ilah and we'll get this volume done?
Yep.
Yeah, we might as well do the volume.
Yep.
Otherwise it stays on the shelf.
Then you could buy it. I think you should buy it.
I think you ordered the cover of the safe definition. You know, I'm not that type of guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. No, Me'ilah is a full masechta.
Okay.
It's good.
Very good.